I never knew what panic attacks were when my first one decided to unleash itself from hell and knock me sideways. I was probably wearing a long dress with baseball boots. I had probably just eaten a cheese and onion patty with chips and batter from Newland Chippy. I was definitely a vegetarian, much to my parents' dismay. And I probably had a Rimmel black cherry lipstick, a single crushed up Embassy No. 1, and a few coins in my coat pocket that didn't add up to much. There definitely wasn't a mobile phone because I ran to the payphone to call my mum. Mobile phones didn't really exist then. At least, they weren't a reality for a 15-year-old girl from the north of England anyway. Mental health wasn't discussed then either. At least, not in a way that described what it really is. Instead, we talked about mad, crazy, scary psychos. We watched horror movies featuring asylums and mental patients. We fell in love with the idea of the tortured rock star and felt both enamoured and ridiculously out of our depth with our infatuations. And we experienced mental health problems without knowing. Well, we knew, but more often than not, we didn't really know what it was that was wrong. We didn't know that we might in fact need therapy rather than the iron tablets for those sick, frightening faint spells. And of course it was different for everyone, but I imagine that even if you were diagnosed with a mental health problem back in the 1990s, you probably didn't tell many people for fear of being labelled crazy or weak or violent. Today the conversation has moved on significantly, but despite huge efforts by charity campaigns, ambassadors and activists, stigma still oozes like ectoplasm from dark corners and falls onto large crowds in wide open spaces like acid rain. Whether it's how someone might discreetly behave, choosing to drop a friend who has, for example, been admitted to a psychiatric hospital, or whether it's a troll on Twitter shouting snowflake or wuss or just take a walk and get over it, at somebody struggling with depression, it still very much exists. Stigma is a societal sickness that can cause distress and inhibit recovery and, put it simply, it needs putting in its place, preferably in a locked box in a darkened room. About Snowflake. I've written this book to challenge the stereotypes we still hear to this day relating to mental health problems. Chapter by chapter, I will break each stereotype down, discuss and debate why and how it is so wildly inaccurate. We need to understand what depression is and what it isn't, i.e. feeling a bit sad. We need to understand what schizophrenia is and what it isn't, i.e. isn't a split personality or a violent psychopathic trait. We need to understand what obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, is and what it isn't, i.e. it isn't a desire to arrange your bookshelves in a colour-coordinated fashion for Instagrammable purposes. We need to uncover and understand the stigma that still remains. There are two key reasons why mental health stigma is important to me, and why it's something I am so keen to challenge. Firstly, as I already mentioned, as a teen, I developed an anxiety disorder that manifested as panic attacks and extreme health anxiety. If anyone spotted me, age 15, on my knees, retching, dizzy, and hanging onto the railings on a busy street in the middle of my first ever panic attack, they might have pointed at me and said, "What the hell is that nutter doing?" If I'd heard that, I would have felt really ashamed. I might have been too embarrassed to see the doctor or the counsellor I was subsequently referred to. And my anxiety might have got much, much worse with no treatment or therapeutic outlet. Luckily, I never heard such comments. But I'm not suggesting that any person saying that would have meant me harm.